Portland's favorite morning roast.
Who was the second hottest Golden Girl? Oh, you want to rank the hot Golden Girls?
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
If yeah. Blanche is number one,
was she the first TV cougar?
Ooh.
Andy Dirk Johnson, Brandon Sprague.
You're going to say Estelle. You're going to surprise me, and I'm not going to judge you for it. Estelle seems like she was probably wild.
Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 The Fan.
Hey, let's do this final hour. Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube.
Ooh, I like it.
Good morning, everybody. Hope your hump days are off to a great start. You got some plans to do some humping today. We got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Statter story right around the corner, 9:27. We'll get to it in a few moments.
Yep.
But the dirty poll rolls on. We're inside the top 10.
There's a lot to get to with this. I wonder if we ask our guests. Yesterday's Oklahoma-based guest said the best steaks came out of Nebraska.
He did, yes.
And I thought that was a bit of a hot take because today's guest might say, no, literally our state, this is what we're known for.
Aren't there a lot of farms in Oklahoma, too? Do they not got good meat down there? That was kind of a surprising answer.
Well, I've been to Oklahoma enough times to say, like,
not good meat, bad meat.
It bad everything.
Well, let's see if our guest agrees. And the number 8 team in the preseason Dirty Poll this year is... the Texas Longhorns.
Hook
come
em.
On down, Steve Sarkisian. Don't you dare do horns down. I will give your ass a 15-yard penalty. Joining us now, Brad Kilner, Texas Sports, host of the Locked On Longhorns podcast and the host of the Bucky and BK show down there in Austin at @BradKilner_ on Twitter. Brad, man, thanks for the time this morning. What do we make of somebody from Oklahoma saying Texas doesn't have good beef?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. Second of all, at least the Oklahoma guest was self-aware enough to know that nothing good comes out of the state of Oklahoma, right? He at least didn't lie to y'all and claim that, oh, they make the best steak and they're the best this, they're the best that. Credit to him for at least being smart enough to realize that. But I'm going Texas over Nebraska every day and twice on Sundays with literally everything in the world. Maybe outside of corn. I'll give them corn, but everything else that's ever been produced, give me the Lone Star State over Nebraska any day.
Well, I'm glad we've settled the food matters. Now let's get to the real stuff. Is Arch Manning struggling in camp?
Uh-oh.
I keep reading the internet, and some people seem to suggest he's not having a great camp. Is that a good note on Texas's defense? Is this overreaction on the internet? What are we hearing about Arch Manning?
Yeah, I would say it's a combination of both, guys. There are high expectations for the Texas defense. Will Muschamp back here coordinating this defense again, and there's plenty of talent on that side of the football. But I think y'all learned last year, like, whenever Arch plays bad, it's front page news. Whenever Arch plays well, it doesn't always make the cut. So Arch Manning has had a very good camp, but he did underperform, and the entire offense had a bad day in Texas's most recent scrimmage on Saturday. Steve Sarkisian said as much, right? It's not just insiders, people looking for clicks, trying to claim that the offense was bad. The head coach said the offense was sloppy, said it was a bad day for Arch. He used the word lethargic. You know, not things Texas fans wanted to hear 2 weeks before the first game of the season. But for the most part, Arch has had a very, very good offseason. He obviously has a bunch of shiny new toys to work with. Texas hit the transfer portal pretty hard, so there's plenty of talent around him. So I expect him to be just fine, and I also think this Texas defense has a little something to do with his struggles as well.
Yeah, that's a tough part with camp stuff. I actually agree with the take on Arch, too. Everybody kind of threw him out halfway through the year last year. This guy's kind of a bust. And then he quietly played really good football down the stretch and all of a sudden reminded us of, like, oh, that's why some of the optimism and hype was there. We're talking with Brad Kilner, Texas Sports, host of the Locked On Longhorns podcast and the Bucky BK show down in Austin, Texas. You mentioned their defense, and this has just been a weird one for me in the offseason looking back on the announcement, because when I think of Texas football last year, I think of their defense keeping them in a lot of games. Now, maybe there's numbers and things that you could point out and say that's not 100% accurate because I didn't watch every second of their season. The decision, though, to move on from a D coordinator and bring in Muschamp was a surprising one, because for me, I felt like their issues on the last season were the offensive side of the ball and their inability to protect Arch and maybe run the football when they needed to. What did you make of that move, and are we expecting this defense to truly be elite this year under Muschamp?
Yeah, great question. I will say it surprised me, and it surprised a bunch of Texas fans, too, when Steve Sarkisian got rid of Pete Kwiatkowski, who was here for 5 years, right? The entire time Steve Sarkisian was in Austin, he had PK as his defensive coordinator, and the defense was playing really well. Obviously, a huge part of Texas reaching the college football playoff semifinals in 2023 and 2024. So it was an eye-opener when he made that move. There weren't a lot of people calling for the defensive coordinator's head, which typically is what it takes for a change like that to happen. But I will say this, like early on last year, yes, the offense really struggled. It was the reason Texas lost to Ohio State in week one. It was the reason Texas lost that embarrassing game to Florida, and they escaped a couple of other games when the offense didn't really show up. But in the second half of the year, as y'all mentioned, Arch Manning started playing better. The offense figured it out, but the Texas defense sort of fell off a cliff. They gave up 38 points to Mississippi State, 31 to Vanderbilt, 35 to Georgia, 37 to Arkansas in four consecutive weeks. Now, Texas went 3-1 in that stretch, so it wasn't the end of the world, but the defense sort of fell off a little bit. The communication on that side of the football wasn't there, and Steve Sarkisian was looking for more aggression. Like, the last defensive coordinator was more of a bend, don't break kind of DC, and again, it worked. I won't bash him too much, but Sark was looking for way more physicality, way more aggression, more chaos on that side of the football. And it's practice, it's camp, but it sounds like to this point he's been very happy with what Will Muschamp has done in those regards since he got back to Texas.
Would they fire Sark if they don't make the playoff again?
You know, it's a fair question. It's the $11 million question down here. And I don't think the answer is yes. I do think plenty of Longhorn fans would be clamoring for that. And look, if Texas goes 6-6 and misses the playoff, then I think it's a realistic conversation. But if the Longhorns go 9-3 like they did last year and just get left out, then no, I don't think Steve Sarkisian would lose his gig. But needless to say, he'd go into 2027 on a very hot seat, fellas.
Interesting. On that note, like, Sark has had an interesting year because so much of the playoff argument last year was on if we just didn't play Ohio State, we're in the college football playoff. And on the one hand, he's 100% correct. If they play Baylor School for the Blind in week two or week one, whatever it was.
Oh, they got to play Florida.
And then win that game. But then the other side of it's like, but yeah, if you just beat Florida, you're also in the playoff. And so I've had this weird back and forth where, like, I understand his gripe and the scheduling conversation. And I want to lead that in asking you this. If I were to ask you to bet on Texas making the playoff if they lose to Ohio State in week two, would you bet yes?
Man, that's a great question. I would bet yes, but obviously that game in week two is huge, and Texas has lost to Ohio State 2 years in a row. This is the first time they're favored in that matchup. This is the first time they get that game in Austin. So the Longhorns confident that they can turn the tide against the Buckeyes. I would say yes, but you could tell by the hesitancy and lack of confidence in my voice that I don't feel great about it because obviously the SEC is good. Congrats to the Big Ten for convincing the SEC to go to 9 conference games. That obviously doesn't make life any easier for Texas or anybody else in this league this year. So the Longhorns will definitely have their work cut out for them. You'd like to go into conference play with that margin for error that they did not have last season, but I would say yes, but obviously I'd feel a hell of a lot better if they find a way to take down the Buckeyes in week two.
Let's take money out of this equation because Texas is very well funded, but let's take the TV revenue out of our consideration here. It's been a couple seasons now. Do Texas fans like being in the SEC, or do you look at the Big 12 and, you know, you've got BYU and Texas Tech. Those are fun stories. Arizona State made the playoff a couple years ago. That's a fun story, but do they miss being in the Big 12 with Oklahoma?
You know, I don't think there is a single Texas fan who misses being in the Big 12. I really don't. And it's kind of a bit. I mean, Texas and Oklahoma fans were dunking on the Big 12 in the last few years they were in the Big 12. They just couldn't wait to get out of the conference. So on one hand, it's like, you know, like you'd have a much easier path to the college football playoff every year if you stuck around and did what Texas Tech did and just scheduled a bunch of cupcakes every year. But no, I don't think anybody regrets. I don't think anybody misses the Big 12. The move to the SEC was very favorable at the time of the announcement, and I think it's pretty close to a unanimous approval rating now a couple of years into the league.
We get that Texas-Oklahoma game every year in the Cotton Bowl, and I'm curious if you can like take us behind the scenes of just what it's such a unique thing in college football where you get a neutral site game, the crowd is split 50-50, it's at the Texas State Fair of just what that is like and holding on to that. Like we've lost so many traditions in this sport. Like you mentioned, you know, leaving the Big 12, some of those great old rivalries. We're dealing with that now. My college football program plays conference games at Rutgers, and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. That's one of those things that is like held true forever. Like, what is that scene like? What is that environment like?
You know, for a lot of teams, realignment has ruined some rivalries and taken some rivalries away. But for Texas, like, they got the A&M game back. They got the Arkansas game back. I know you didn't ask about those two, but that's one of the good things, right? It feels like from a rivalry standpoint, Texas going to the SEC has actually been better. But the Texas OU game you asked about, the Red River Shootout up in Dallas, it's unlike anything that you'll ever be a part of. And I highly recommend, you don't have to have a dog in the fight. If you're just a college football fan or a fan of competition in general, that's a game that you have to go to before you die. Yeah, split at the 50-yard line. You know, one side goes nuts on every play. The other side's ticked off on every play. And sort of what separates, I mean, that's obviously a separator right there, but the fact that the game is played at the State Fair of Texas every year. So not only are there 85,000 people inside the Cotton Bowl going nuts, you've got like 250,000 people walking around the Cotton Bowl at the State Fair, stuff in their face with turkey legs and better steaks and fried food and funnel cake and all of that. So it's like you walk out of the – normally you walk out of the stadium, you walk to the parking lot, you go home. You walk out of the stadium, there's hundreds of thousands of more fans that are cheering, going nuts throughout the entire day. So – you know, I've been to the Civil War before. Hopefully I don't get canceled for still calling it that.
No,
that's a fun atmosphere for that game. But yeah, it's something different when it's a neutral site, but the element of the State Fair and the split at the 50-yard line. Again, if you ever get the chance, heck, just make the chance to get to Dallas for that game before you die. It's one of a kind.
Who is the breakout player nobody's talking enough about for Texas this year that's going to catch our eye and be like, damn, this guy, we did not talk enough about him?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll go with the freshman, which is a little risky for a team as talented and as experienced as Texas, but came by the name of Jermaine Bishop Jr. From the state of Texas, one of the most productive high school players that the Houston area has ever seen, was recruited as an athlete, and this guy's the lightest player on the team. He's 166 pounds, and I think they're rounding up with that. He's lighter than the kickers. But this dude is so unbelievably fast. He was actually working at defensive back some this summer, but he's playing wide receiver. You know, you got the offensive-minded head coach with Steve Sarkisian. You knew he was going to win that battle. But he has been tremendous, an early enrollee. We've heard about him a lot going back to the winter. Had a great spring, had a great summer, and has been getting it done every single day in fall camp. And Steve Sarkisian was actually asked about him this past weekend and said, yeah, I expect him to have a significant role for this team early in the year. So, obviously, week two, number one Ohio State in town. Everyone's going to be talking about Arch and Cam Coleman and Colin Simmons. There's plenty of superstars, but that might be the moment. Number four, Jermaine Bishop Jr., the freshman. That's a breakout name to remember for sure.
Lighter than the kickers is absolutely a saying that I'm going to steal, so thank you for that. last one for you. I have them at number eight in the preseason poll. There's just a little bit of like, man, I get it. I see the talent. I understand it. I just need to kind of see it to believe it. Is eight fair, and does Texas make the college football playoff this year?
You know, I think that's way too low. And my guess is y'all are doing some sort of countdown where you're not revealing your top seven yet.
Yes, correct, Amundo.
Correct.
I might text y'all off the air to hear who your top seven is, because I don't know how you could find seven teams that are better than Texas. I think that's a little low. Look, I understand Texas underachieved last year. Maybe there's some buyer's remorse for people who are super high on the Longhorns in 2025 and were obviously let down by Texas missing the college football playoff. But they, I would argue, are better everywhere. Now, it's not to say they don't have questions. They're not a perfect, flawless football team by any stretch, but they've got more experience at quarterback. They've got two running backs out of the portal who are better than anything they had last year. They got the best receiver in the transfer portal. They got a couple of starters on the offensive line. They've got all sorts of studs on defense and added some impact players there too. So just from a sheer talent and experience perspective, I think this Texas team is a lot better than the one last year. And again, they were 9-3 last season. They barely missed the college football playoff. There were a lot of folks thinking they had a strong case to get in. So I expect Texas to make the cut. I think the Longhorns are a legit national championship contender. I've got Oregon in my top four too, but I think Texas is a top four team going into this season.
Well, I as a co-host was also a little surprised to see Texas where they were at. And we can text you on the side to let you know. We're trying to unveil it day by day. But yeah, I was a little surprised to see where he had Texas, but I think part of the thing, and I'm just speaking for him, and I hope I'm speaking correctly, I think part of it is just, you know, part of this is the coach, right? Like, out here, Dan Lanning has ended his season, the last two seasons, getting embarrassed on the national stage in the playoff, and a lot of people are like, you got the talent, what's happening here? Where's the disconnect? But he doesn't largely, he's only lost one game that he shouldn't have, and that was his first year against Oregon State. He takes care of the teams that he should. Texas lost to Florida last year, who was abysmal, fired their coach and lost their quarterback. I guess what I would ask is, what about Sark makes you feel uneasy about his coaching? Because right now for Oregon fan, it is Dan Lanning not getting blown out in a playoff game facing a team for the second time. What is to you Sarkisian's kryptonite as a coach that does leave you concerned and maybe leaves Texas coming up a little short of expectation?
I think the answer to that is Ohio State and Georgia. Right, Texas is 0-4 against those, 0-5 against those teams in the last couple of years. So, yes, the Florida game hurt. Obviously, that's one that sticks out with everybody. And it's a little different for Steve Sarkisian because Sark was 5-7 in his first year in Austin, and then he was 8-5 in year two. So you can go back through his entire tenure and find a couple of games that he lost that he probably shouldn't have lost. But you know, for years, like in that transition period where Texas was like, we knew they were going to the SEC, but they were still in the Big 12. Longhorn fans heard for years that Texas had no chance in the SEC. And you guys aren't winning the Big 12 every year. How do you expect to come to maybe the deepest conference in college football? At the time, it was regarded as the best in college football. How do you expect to come into this league and compete? Sark's 13-3 in 2 years in the SEC. Two losses to Georgia and the embarrassing one to Florida. So I think there are less Longhorn fans worried about that random loss. And more of them worried about Ohio State. Like, those are the teams that you have to beat likely to win a national championship. So when you go up against the best of the best, do you have a coaching advantage on the sideline, or are you going to get out-coached and are you going to come up short in a game like that? And that's the biggest question with Steve Sarkisian. If he truly is an elite college football coach, he's got to find a way to beat some of the best college football coaches around the country more than he has.
Yeah, it's a comparison that him and Lanning have in common, that idea of, you know, the Florida loss obviously kind of the outlier there, but the idea of not, like, you're in a good spot, but it's also a frustrating spot because you just can't quite get over those last two hurdles that you need to get over, and they've been very similar in that regard. Brad Kellner covering Texas, the host of the Locked On Longhorns podcast, the Bucky BK Showdown in Austin, at Brad Kellner _ on Twitter. Awesome insight, great preview, man. We appreciate the time, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
No doubt. Anytime, guys. Enjoy the season. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Absolutely. There you go. Brad Kellner of Texas Sports.
Good stuff from Brad there. I love the shot.
I love pushing
Oklahoma
back, dude, at the end, too. Like, hey, you disagree with the ranking? Disagree with the ranking, baby.
Well, was I wrong there of, like, there's probably other elements. Maybe you don't trust Arch to the full extent, but, like, I think some of this has to do with the coach. Does it not for you?
It absolutely does. Yeah, it absolutely does. In the Florida loss,
him coming into me, you and I can agree or disagree to whatever degree on schedule stuff. And I've always just maintained, don't lose to Florida, and who cares about Ohio State?
You're not
right?
wrong.
If Oregon loses a big non-conference game to the likes of an Ohio State and then misses the playoff because they lose to Maryland.
Right. Don't lose to Maryland.
You can't blame the non-conference game. Right. Don't lose to Maryland.
Don't lose to Maryland.
Him coming into the media days and saying that, there's an element for me that's like, they're so talented, they'll probably overcome this. Also, why are you still talking about this? Move the hell on.
Yeah, it's a
new
season.
You got a big opportunity. You got a loaded roster, maybe the best in college football, a returning quarterback with a ton of experience. Why are you talking about your non-conference tilts from a year ago?
Agreed.
You came up short.
Stop politicking it and
shut up and move on.
It is. I can't remember who had the take. Somebody had a take recently, and I was like, man, it's crazy to say, but I kind of agree with it. And it was the idea of if you look at the schedules that each of them have after that game, the loser of the Texas-Ohio State game will not make the college football playoff.
It was George Reister.
Is that who it was? Thank you.
Whoever he said, I mean,
you look at the, and then you look at the schedule. So they,
Ohio State's is brutal.
Here's Texas. So they play Ohio State. They get them at home in week two. Yeah. So they say you lose that game. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, you go on the road to Neyland Stadium. Now, it's true freshman quarterback. Like, who knows, right? Yeah. Then you get Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I have to mention Florida because you couldn't beat them last year, but you get them at home now. Then you get Ole Miss at home, then Mississippi State, then you go on the road to Missouri, on the road to LSU, Arkansas, who should suck, and then close at A&M. Can you run the gauntlet
not losing two of those games,
right? Like, there's a really challenging schedule. And Ohio State's is the same way if they are to lose that game in week two to Texas, where they then have to go on the road. Let me pull it up quickly, and then we'll go here because I know we got Statter story.
Yeah.
After that game, they go to, here it is. So it's not tough for a while. Kent State, Illinois, then you go on the road to Iowa, which can be a meat grinder. Maryland at home, then you have back-to-back on the road at Indiana, on the road at USC before coming home to play Oregon. Mm-hmm. At Nebraska at the end of November, should be a win, but, you know, I guess. And then Michigan in the final game of the season. Yep. Of just the idea of whoever loses that. I heard that, Rice, thank you for reminding me of that. It's a great point. I don't know if I fully agree, but it's a
I love the take, though.
It's a strong argument because it happened to Texas last year. And to your point, don't lose to Florida and you're in. Can you avoid that landmine somewhere on your schedule?
So I heard him say this yesterday because I caught a little bit of it, which is why I pulled the cut. And I would like to say this, if we can get him this year, like Pate, he made the argument the 12 team is going to eliminate the pressure of the regular season, and I've always thought that that's just outlandish to me. You always care about every game the way you do in the NFL when your team's 11-6. You're always going to care, right? It's a once-a-week event. College football is giving us the exact same thing here. All the people that were doomsdaying about, oh, the expansion's going to kill the regular season. Really? Because people have the take that if you lose the second week of the season, you're not going to make the playoff. I don't know if it's accurate, but it's enough to look at the schedule and go, holy crap, dude, are we going to be able to get through this?
You got to walk a tightrope the rest of the day.
Because three
or the
wins,
rest of the season.
3 wins feels a little defeating in terms of making the playoff.
I'm with you there, man. Good stuff on the Texas preview. They are number 8. Who's number 7? Find out tomorrow. It is time for Stat or Story, and that is next on The Fan.
Crunch the numbers.
There's 6,127 students at Adams, 58% of which are girls. So that's 7,107.32 boobs.
Break the news.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Is it a stat or a story?
Evidence based on olfactory prowess is inadmissible, in case you didn't know.
This is Stat or Story, a monumental judgment call with Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
That's right, folks. It is Stat or Story time on your Wednesday. Hello, everybody. Welcome into Stat or Story.
Jeez, oh, Pete.
We got a turn and burn a little bit running against it, so I'll just go ahead and tee us off here. Your number right out of the gate is 35. 35. Let me go to my ding and buzzer page here. Is it the number of career touchdown passes from one Arch Manning going into a year with big expectations? 35 career touchdown passes. Or is it where the state of Oregon ranks in terms of the hardest working states in the union?
We're probably worse than that. I'm going to say this is a stat.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, as a state, though, there's a lot of people in rural Oregon.
Ooh, the real Oregonians.
Timber industry, fishing industry, all of that sort of stuff.
I don't think anybody works in the city of Portland. Everybody's at coffee shops all day.
I go to Costco at 11 a.m.
What do you
There's
do?
Nobody at work.
Now, to
it's
be fair,
crazy.
I'm also there. But
rush hour is starting at 1:45 in the afternoon now, every day.
It's going to get worse here in a few weeks. I will go story.
Okay, so Sprague stat. Swag story. The irony of this is I wanted to use an Arch Manning stat because we were doing Texas today. And the number ended up, I was going to do total touchdowns, and it's the exact same number. Arch Manning has 49 career total touchdowns, and we are the 49th of 50 hardworking states in America.
I tried to tell you.
The hardest working states include South Dakota, where 6.5% of the workforce have multiple jobs.
Ugh.
Right. Also has the fifth lowest share of idle youth, which are people between 18 and 24. Oregon not looking great. We log some of the lowest numbers in terms of hours worked per week, followed only by Rhode Island, Vermont, and Utah, and also had one of the lowest employment rates compared to other states. Oregon's unemployment rate 5.2. California's is 5.1, Nevada 5. South Dakota has the lowest unemployment rate in the union at 2%, followed by North Dakota at 2.2. So we're a bunch of lazy bastards.
Yeah. There's other categories we rank bad in that I care more about than that.
Tend to agree with you.
All right, your number, 860.
860.
Is it?
Big number.
The total receiving yards from one Christian McCaffrey last year, which would put him ahead of Drake London, Jalen Waddle, DK Metcalf, T. Higgins, Jacoby Myers, Davante Adams, or is it the amount of original Nintendo video games that were stolen from a man who had collected them and was three away from the full collection of all Nintendo video games, who intended to sell them and give the money entirely to his grandchild?
Oh my God. I'm going to go stat. I know he had a good year receiving. Maybe I'm miscalculating. That's the original Nintendo. Did we have 860 games for the original Nintendo? Maybe we did. I'm going to go stat. Give me stat.
Okay.
I'll go stat as well.
Stat's
about right for CMC.
Okay. You both would be incorrect. He actually had more. He had 900.
Close to 1,000.
24. He was close to 1,000. Remember, he had over 400 touches last year. He finished ahead of Drake London, Jalen Waddle, DK Metcalf, T. Higgins, Devontae Adams, Ladd McConkey, Michael Pittman, amongst NFL wide receivers in receiving yards last year. You know, this is a story, sadly. A man in Puyallup, no doubt.
Puyallup?
Puyallup.
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 The Puyallup.
Puyallup.
Puyallup. All-time dumbtown name.
Yeah.
Minute I heard it, first time in my life, I was like, what is
Why are the state fairgrounds there? I've never figured that
Have you been to that?
Yeah, we in college.
My family up there used to brag about their state fair. Like, we gotta go.
Puyallup.
Yeah. I have family lives in Puyallup. Anyways, a man in Puyallup, delightful people, terrible town name. He had been collecting original Nintendo video games. He had collected 860 games.
Wow.
He was three games away
from having the
completing the entire NES library.
Wow.
And people who estimate said if he would have completed the set, it would have been worth $100,000. Wow. He was going to give all of the money to his grandchild for either college or post-high school life, but somebody broke into his home while him and his family were out of town and stole the entire collection.
That's horrible, dude.
I hope they find that person.
I do, too.
Well, they won't. I actually more hope, and this is, I'm not a big fan of it, but this is where I like it. I hope some GoFundMe.
See, somebody needs to set something up.
You know,
give
everybody,
this guy some
give 100,000 people to give $1 each so we can get at least to the money so he could have completed and done what he wanted to do.
That's horrible, dude. Horrible.
All right, your final number is 23. Is it the number of goals scored by one Kevin Kelce in all competitions during his run with the Timbers the last two seasons? Or
I almost said, who's Kevin Kelce? Literally just did the pup date.
I thought you were a footy guy, man.
Nah.
I thought you were footy in over there. What's the matter with you?
Nottingham Forest is not looking good right now, right?
Where's the footy fandom?
They were better than Tottenham in the opener. That was embarrassing.
We lost 1-0, and then Leeds beat us again yesterday 2-0. We haven't scored a goal in two matches.
Or is it the percentage of men in a recent survey who said they would prefer to spend time with their dogs than go on a date? It is National Dog Day.
Is it 23 is your number?
Yes.
This is a stat. This is a stat. And I'll tell you why, Andy.
After the break.
Coming up next. It's a stat because this percentage is higher in men that would rather hang out with their dogs than date.
I've never heard of the player before. I don't know if he's any good or not. I don't even know how to contextualize 23
Travis
goals. Is
Kelce,
that a lot
Kevin
of goals?
Kelce.
Is that good goals? Is that a high number of goals? I can't even begin to comprehend all those numbers, so I'm going to lean on you. Give me stat. God, you're an idiot.
Kevin Kelce, 19 goals in all competitions for the Timbers the last two seasons.
This poll's a lie. 40% of men would rather be with a dog than go on a date.
23%, nearly a quarter of men would prefer to spend time with their dogs than go on a date. For women, it's 39% would prefer spending time with their dogs rather than going
on
a date.
Don't blame them. I don't
either.
I know.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, that's not that fun.
Yeah, well,
I'd rather be with my dog, too.
So, yeah, National Dog Day. The biggest dog-loving states, according to this, California, number one.
That's just because of people.
New York, people. Washington,
yeah,
number
cheating.
Three.
These are cheating.
I don't know where Oregon is. They
Washington
did not make the
count.
Top 10.
I'll allow Washington.
Washington counts. California is just cheating.
There's just too many people.
New York is just cheating.
Tennessee, Florida, Massachusetts, Texas, Missouri, Ohio, and Arizona are your top 10.
I'm surprised there's not a Dakota in there or a Montana, like hunting.
Service on the farm, I guess, to a certain extent.
Oregon, 68% is the dog-loving rate.
Can I say something real quick?
There's a lot of cat people in Oregon.
Yeah, we got a lot of cat people in Oregon.
Cat people.
I am always really surprised when I know somebody's a dog lover and then opts to no longer do dog. I don't fault them. I'm not judging them. But, like, my dad is this. My dad had a dog almost the entirety of his adult life with my stepmom. And they've lost their last two dogs. And we're going on, like, a decade.
No new dog?
They're never going to have dogs
Fully
again.
Retired?
Fully retired.
So, no, like, day-to-day not that they don't travel or
don't
do things,
but... sit, right? Sure. Like, they're willing to do that. They don't have a dog. Swag is also like this.
Well, I get his argument, because they're traveling a lot, and he's still working, and they're both still working. Like, I get that argument of it.
Yeah, and it's wanting to not leave the dog, like, alone at the house for... long periods of time. Yeah.
Because if you're here in the morning and then you go home for a bit, then you go to a Hops game or a Pilots game.
She's got rehearsal or whatever.
Who's taking the dog out? Who's walking the dog? I get that.
My dad's reason is he's very busy as a retired guy.
Yeah.
His reason is legitimately, I can't emotionally handle the end anymore.
There's that too.
I get that, man. I get that. I think it'll be, not that it makes it any easier. This might sound dumb, but I feel like when you're older in life, and your kids are now all gone, and it's just you and your significant other. Like, when my dog dies, it will be one of the hardest days of my life. Like, it will be, and everybody who's been through it knows what it feels like, and I dread that day every day. Mm-hmm. But there's also the balance of, like, it's going to be horrible and soul-crushing, and then I have two crazy kids playing with me to, like, immediately, like, let's go do something fun or try and, you know, take our minds off it. Mm-hmm. I feel like the weight of the loss when you're an empty nester is significantly greater than not having kids around.
Fair point. They lost their two dogs when the kids were all
like, that's
large.
That's it, right? And now, if I, you know, so I just, yeah, my, when my parents got into it, because our family dog died, and they asked, hey, if something happened, they wanted, before they got a dog, they wanted to check with me if I will take the dog if something happened. Like, are you okay taking the dog? Because my parents are older.
Oh, because you don't want to just have a dog.
Have a dog, and then, right. So they're like, and I was like, of course, and we love their dog. But they checked with that too, of like, hey, what if something happens to us? Somebody got to take that dog off your hands. There you go. Sadder story every Wednesday at 9:27. Always makes you think, always makes you wonder, makes you smile, makes you cry. That's why we love the segment. Let's wrap it up on a Wednesday. We'll do it next on The Fam. Well, last one for us today on a Wednesday. Just heard of a great segment idea that Patrick Harris, I believe, is debuting today. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I believe he's debuting today.
I hope I get credit for the name.
He has gotten approval on using the name that you gave him.
He had to get approval?
He went up the ladder, smart move, and he got the thumbs up, said you can use it.
I would have just done it. I wouldn't have asked for permission.
That is the difference between you and Patrick Harris. That is the difference. And he got the approval. Hopefully he gives you the credit, because it's a hell of a name.
Well, I need something. You beat me in the interview.
How did I beat you? Oh, with the good questions? We each had a couple. He was little...
No, I got one. You got two. I kept track. There was... Yeah. That's a good question. I was like, damn it. Now this is a contest in my brain.
You know, I will be fair. He was a bit of a good question slut, if you will. You know, to get three of them in one interview. I mean, I'll take it. I didn't think it was, you know, I'm out here grinding. But
I'm going to text him like, you know what? You've been called on our show.
You're a bit of a good question slut. You're a little too easy. Okay. Make me work for it a little bit here, you know, make me grind. I digress. Anyways, as we wrap up today, this is a little lengthy, so I apologize for the length of it, but I thought it was interesting. I had never known, I know the Dolly Parton song, Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know the backstory of it, why she wrote it. I also did not know, I didn't even contemplate, the song wasn't released until like 2000 and... It's only been out for maybe 20 years.
And when did she visit again? Because she said they're some of the finest people she's ever met.
Forever ago.
Yeah.
Right? But this interview's an old one. So this is why it was confusing of like, did she sing it in public but not fully release it? Because I thought I read that the song wasn't released until later, but maybe I read that wrong. Anyway, she was in Eugene years ago, and she went on an interview. This is on K2 years ago. And she did an interview, and they asked her about the lyrics behind the song and where it came from. And here is the late, great Dolly Parton.
You told me that you wrote a song about Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah, I did.
I really want to hear about that.
And I found out that you was from Portland. Years ago, when I was working with Porter, we had been on a tour.
Porter Wagner.
I'm sorry. I just assumed everybody linked us together. anyway, we used to do a lot of duet songs, and I traveled with his show for a long time. And we had been on the road and were so far away from home that I got sick. I was bad sick. It was in the dead of winter, and I was the only girl on the road, and I didn't really want anybody to have to take care of me. I was kind of embarrassed for, you know, when you're sick, you don't like people to see you sick. This one night we were in Eugene, Oregon, and Coat of Many Colors was a pretty big record then. And so I told Porter, I said, I want to start seeing if I can get dressed today, and I'm going to go out on stage tonight. So I went out on stage, and I was so weak that when I came out, he had told him that I was sick, but I wanted to come out. And so I got a standing ovation. And so I started to sing Coat of Many Colors, and they stood up again, and I just started crying because, you know, I was so touched by it, and it was like a friend from home or something. And so that night after the show, I wrote a song, and it said something about Eugene, Oregon. I'll remember you for the rest of my life. I won't forget how good you've been to me, and I won't be forgetting all the kindness that you showed to a homesick country girl a long, long way from Tennessee. And it says, tired and weary and feeling low, and among strange people I didn't know, a long, long way from home and a long time gone. But Eugene, Oregon, you were kind. The love you gave was genuine. You gave me inspiration and the strength to carry on. And it goes on into... You know, the only way I could thank you was to sit down and write you this song.
That's lovely. I had never, I've never heard it, and I'm very surprised and touched to hear that. Oregon people are like that.
Now I'm about to cry again.
So she wrote the song in 1972 after the concert at the Lane County Fairgrounds. The song was not officially released until 2009.
That's interesting. I wonder what the
isn't that funny? And this was an interview in 1980, and they knew about this because he was like, you wrote a song about Eugene, but she hadn't released it at the time of the interview. In 1980, she had written it 8 years earlier. And so, yeah, it was not released until she released a 4-CD box set called Dolly in 2009. It was one of the songs on that 4-CD box set. So, look, an all-time legend. We talked a lot about her on the show today. Rightfully so, and a very fun and cool local connection of a song that I believe a lot of Oregon's bands will play after, like they still play it at games and the tour and all that.
If you're Oregon, are you not pulling the actual that part she just cited on the interview? Are you not pulling that as part of something during a football game?
If we're going to do Grateful Dead unis, should Oregon do Dolly Parton jerseys this year? And what would they look like?
Bigger shoulder pads in the front.
I think they'd look great.
I think they got to stick out a little more.
I'd buy one.
Yep.
R.I.P. Dolly.
They got to have rhinestones on them.
Got to have rhinestones on them. Some would argue their jerseys already have rhinestones on them, so they'd fit right in.
They said she's going to be buried next to her husband, who passed away not that long ago. Yeah. Is she going to be the first bedazzled coffin?
Should be.
Rhinestoned coffin to go down.
I don't know. What was Liberace's?
I don't know.
Well done. That will do it for us, folks. If you missed any of the show, go check the podcast, 1051thefan.com, at 1051thefan on Twitter, at Dirt and Sprague on Twitter. That, my friends, will do it for us. Texas was the dirty poll stop today.
Ooh, where are we going tomorrow, Eugene?
Here's what I'll say.
Huh?
You might want to tune in to the first hour tomorrow.
Oh.
It could be earlier than usual.
We got an early dirty poll. That's little dirty bird.
Let's be dirty birds together, baby. That will do it for us, folks. Thanks for being a part of our hump day. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m. The Firm of Patrick Harris is next. You listen to 105.1 FM, the Fan.